Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Y'all know how much that meant to me. I appreciate y'all. I love y'all. But the biggest thing, we got to get back to work, man. That was a hell of a win. But we got to get back to the grind on the next week, man. Love y'all boys, man.
Honestly, it meant a lot to me. Held it in all week, energy-wise. Try not to bring it up too much. Obviously, we had an interview earlier in the week. I just try to keep it professional. But obviously, in the back of my mind, it meant a lot to me. And I wanted to do more showing than telling. You know, I play with a lot of passion and a lot of love. I can't say I didn't think about this game when I got traded. Wondered if we played him, and then obviously he was on the schedule. But I take it one game at a time, and I knew when this game came about, I was just trying to take advantage and get a win for my team. But obviously it's emotional. I can play with a lot of emotions.
Former Bills great Stephon Diggs, now Houston Texans contributor. More catches, more yards than the entire Bills receiver corps in this game. Bills lose. It is Buffalo Bills Football Monday, brought to you by Northwest Bank. For what's next, get started at northwest.com. Bills get hit over the top with a big Nico Collins touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
You do wonder what would happen if he played the full game.
He's awesome.
He is awesome.
He did get I had him in fantasy. He got a nice fantasy day on two plays, right?
Yep.
Two targets, two catches. Diggs was fine. He was good.
I thought he was very good.
He was very good. He did a lot of the stuff we assumed, right? Like he would play middle of the field, underneath.
He made tough catches. He had some yak plays. He converted two third down plays for them.
Yep.
He got open. He got separation. He had quick timing catches.
Tank Dell was good in the first half.
Tank Dell was good. Yep. The Bills missed that. They missed that in their offense. Maybe that's Shakir now, but they missed that. And they certainly miss somebody on the outside that can do anything.
It's damning how much they miss Shakir. Khalil Shakir is a good player. You should not miss him this much. That you just simply should not miss him that much. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe those games would have looked almost exactly the same had he played. And he did play in the Raven game, remember? It's just that he was definitely banged up after he twisted the ankle or whatever happened. But, man, it shouldn't be that critical that he is, that your offense looks that way when he leaves. We'll see. Maybe when he comes back, they'll still look that way.
For what it's worth, end of game management, watching this second down play over and over and over and over again, you know, you want to say hindsight's 20-20, that's fine. End of game management, I wonder when, if ever, people come for Josh Allen's end of game management rather than Sean McDermott's. Because on this series, I don't like that they threw it on first down, but they did.
Yep.
Now they need to throw it on second down or whatever. They need a first. When they're sitting there first and 10 with 32 seconds left,
yep.
My plan would have been keep the clock running three times, at least twice. Run it twice. They ran for more yards per carry than they threw yards per pass.
Yep.
Your best play is James Cook. I would hand it to James Cook on first down. I'd probably do it on second down. I'd probably do it on third down. And if that meant I go three and out and I punt to them so they have no timeouts, I take my chances there. Then passing three times. Yeah. Is it conservative? Yes. And you know what? If they ran three times and punted and the Texans were able to return the punt into field goal range, like McDermott probably gets crushed for that. But the reality is, on second and 10, the game management calls for, you need a first down here. All right? Let's put the guys out there quickly. Joe, run down the names of who was on the field for Josh Allen on this critical play.
All right, so from top to bottom, they have five receivers. Top of the field is Ty Johnson.
I'm sorry, who?
Tyler.
Who is out wide?
Ty Johnson.
Okay, it's a slight improvement from Latavius Murray last year.
Okay,
this positionless football the Bills are in love with.
Yeah.
Ty Johnson. You're the Texans. What do you think is going to happen there? You think the ball's going to Ty Johnson?
It would be amazing.
Okay, so it's Ty Johnson and then?
Tyrell Shavers.
Okay. And then?
Then it is...
Kincaid.
Then it's Matt Collins. And then it's Keon Coleman.
That is your five receiver set. your five pass catcher set.
Yep.
Okay, so what does Josh Allen do on this play? We need a first down. It doesn't really matter if the clock's going to move. Just need a first down. He has an easy button throw to Kincaid right away. It's as easy button an easy button throw could be. He also has one to Coleman if he times it and just rips the ball into Coleman. And they get 5 yards. Maybe someone breaks a tackle. Maybe they get their first down. Instead, Josh Allen, game management here, he goes for a 97-yard touchdown. That's kind of what he did. Right? He goes for the...
It
certainly looks a lot like the play that he and Hollins almost hit earlier in the game.
Where Hollins is in the slot, and he kind of like fades to the outside as he runs it up the field.
He couldn't bring it in. Yep. Allen goes for the big one. You want game management? McDermott wanted some game management there, and his quarterback let him down on that play. Yeah. In my opinion, that's a mistake from Allen.
It's a mistake from Allen. Is anyone surprised? Is anyone that stunned? There might be an argument to be made that you could criticize their coaching for believing he wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
Right? Like, hey, we need the first. Your quarterback might do that. You got to know at all times he might, and maybe you just have to live with it. But
sometimes we love it.
Maybe that's the defense for running the ball on 2nd and 10, is my quarterback might just chuck this deep, and then I might be in really big trouble. There's also, I think, criticism on Brandon Bean's part for that play. Your quarterback, as I just compared to, the Incredible Hulk. You cannot stop him from turning green sometimes. So you get some fast guys.
Yeah.
Get some guys that are open down the field. This play, it's almost never going to work. But it's more likely to work if you have someone that can run by the safety. Mac Hollins is not even past the safety when the ball arrives. You make it Xavier Worthy. Make it anybody. Whoever the modern-day DeSean Jackson is. Somebody that runs a 4-2-8
on this offense. That's supposed to be MVS, or it's supposed to be Curtis Samuel that has that speed, but they don't.
So just someone that Allen can throw the ball 100 yards out to that can run under it. Because Mac Hollins is not... I think the first play to Mac Hollins wasn't even as much on Allen as some think. I think part of that was Hollins is not fast enough to run under that ball. The pass has to be so perfect. Your margin for error is so slim. Just I think it's a roster build thing. I think it's a little bit of a coaching thing. And I absolutely think it's part that your quarterback just... Once in a while in those late game situations, the Chief playoff game, he's going to want it all.
Joe Burrow threw for 5 touchdowns and like a million yards against Baltimore and lost.
Lamar Jackson had a horrible fumble in overtime and somehow won.
Scott in Rochester. Hey, Scott.
Hey, guys. So I was one of the clowns calling for Joe Brady for president after the Jacksonville game. I'd like to wholeheartedly revoke that endorsement because from what I can see, he's becoming Ken Dorsey 2.0. And the script is very similar. Both of these OCs, they start out quite well, their first 2-3 games in the league, and all the defensive coordinators adjust, and they have nothing to fall back on. It's going the same as it did for Dorsey, and it's becoming very disheartening. And honestly, if I was Josh, and I think Josh would be well within his rights to force his way out of the organization the way things were going. They've had him for 6 or 7 years, just refused to go outside of the organization for an OC. They refused to move up McDermott, who's a defensive-minded head coach, which only gets you so much. I mean, who amongst us didn't see that third down blitz coming yesterday where Agumbawale just completely burned them and they picked up another first down? I mean, that was so, like, you knew it was going to happen. And I do think wide receivers are flawed. Bean has done this organization a tremendous disservice by not getting guys on the outside. I mean, I don't want to say you got CFL-level guys on the outside now, but they're not very good. But I don't think that's a fatal flaw. I think the fatal flaw continues to be Sean McDermott. Just numerous examples. The Denver game last year with 10 men on the field, 13 seconds being the biggest one.
Well, communication. The common thread, Scott, between 13 seconds, the Denver game, and this game is communication with the defense in a very important moment when time is short. It's another communication issue. The play before the field goal with Dorian Williams and what they're doing there and what play call they're getting in and who's supposed to be on the field is another communication issue.
It's just, yeah, exactly. It's more of the same. We continue to keep doing the same thing and expect different results. That's insanity. And Going back to the offense, like, unless you've got a dynamite OC like Dable was, I mean, this offense has been absolutely lost since Brian Dable left. Sure, they get fat on, like, inferior opponents, the Dolphins, you know, they pad their stats there. But when it comes to playing good teams that have superior talent and superior coaching, this team is always second class, and it will be as long as McDermott is the head coach. That's my opinion. I don't know what you guys think. That's all. Thank you.
Thanks, Scott. And I think McDermott remains a good coach in general and a really good defensive coach. I don't think that changed yesterday. In fact, it might have been bolstered a little bit more, although Nico Collins going out probably helped quite a bit.
I mean, if a rookie safety doesn't make a mistake, they held the Texans' offense to 16 points.
Maybe. If Collins plays the whole time, they might have put up 40.
Right, and but, he also doesn't get hurt
for me,
on that. Yeah,
yeah. Like, there's also this... You know, you said, like, the offense since Dable. What lessons do they take away? One of the things I said on these airwaves 1,000 times, when they won those games and Stephon Diggs did not put up big numbers, I said to you, Joe, and to everybody that would listen, if the lesson you took from that was that you don't need that player, that's a bad lesson learned. That is not the lesson you should have learned. Their offense did not go gangbusters once Joe Brady took over. We remember a win streak. They needed a late field goal to beat Easton Stick on the road.
Yeah.
They were in competitive games.
And they didn't put New England away until like the last drive of that game,
right?
In week 18.
That's right. They were not, yeah. Joe Brady took over and they were gangbusters.
They got a punt return in Miami.
Right?
Like,
and I don't know what the long-term identity is. I mean, you know, you mentioned Josh forcing his way out. I wouldn't worry about that for a second. Not really, not at all. But, man, especially because everybody likes Josh, and Josh likes everybody. It's the whole one of the guys things. There was the story from training camp about how maybe they think it's his turn to take over the team. Diggs is gone, so Josh steps into the role as the alpha leader or whatever you want to say. Like, okay, but he likes to be one of the guys, and you wonder when and how he decides to ratchet that up. Is he cold enough to be like, one of my buddies has to leave this team because he can't hack it? I like that guy, but he can't play.
Like mid-season, you mean?
Yeah. I mean anybody like that. Because if you get cozy with the quarterback, you're safe. You're going to get a job as a backup quarterback.
Yeah.
He seems to like all their draft picks. Maybe it's just noise. I don't know.
I mean,
like, I'm not down on Allen, of course. I mean, he's one of the best players in the entire league. But this belief that as long as you have him, you'll be good, that's not true for anybody. This is a sport with a lot of positions and a very specialized set of skills. You cannot roll out nobodies with Allen and think that's going to work. Anybody that came and said, look at how the Chiefs did it without any receivers. Again, wrong lesson learned. The lesson should always be, lean into your strength. Josh Allen's one of your strengths. And they decided that, well, it's fine. We don't need any help around him. Joe, the two boundary receivers yesterday are $1 million free agents. People refer to Curtis Samuel, by the way, as like, well, I mean, you're really not getting production out of an $8 million guy. $8 million is not much. It's
not.
Even that is a bargain receiver idea.
It's eight times more than Matt Collins.
It is eight times more than Matt Collins.
Is getting more snaps and targets.
I became fixated on the idea of Darnell Mooney in the last 2 weeks. He signed for $13 million. Darnell Mooney would flourish with Josh. Good, fast, speedy receiver, runs down the field. And that's what Samuel's supposed to be, and we're not getting it yet. Frustration. I know. They're still going to win the division. Hey, Zoe.
Hey, how you doing? There's so much I kind of want to say, but real quick, like you said, they're not using all the players at their strength. You know, for example, that Mac Hollins throw that he dropped. Valdez-Scantling is the person, if you will, do that, even though he's known for drops, not comeback routes. You got Coleman. You thought guy like that in the red zone for jump balls. That guy in the red zone 3 times, didn't attempt none of them. He was what, number one in the combine in the Gutman drills? No drag routes with him at all. Matchups. towards the end of the game. You want them to burn their timeout. You can't run the ball. You don't have James Cook out there to dump him the ball in space and show numerous of times when he get the ball in space, he could get a first down to get them to burn the timeout. You're not calling those up. At the end of the day, Josh Allen don't trust none of them. He don't trust none of them. That's why the ball didn't come out a second sooner. He not trusting none of them. He throwing the ball to guys in the back of their head. They're not in the right spot.
What a moment that was. So
it hit Coleman, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, the Coleman. But he's getting frustrated, and he's holding the ball a tenth of a second because he's not trusting none of these players. He don't have Shakir out there. And then I didn't even know Knox even played. Some of them is some of this offensive play calling, too, because, like, that scene that Josh Allen slightly underthrew him, why don't you just go back to that? You could go right back to that. They were going back to the same plays.
Yep.
You started off the game with using James Cook, and they couldn't stop him. In that situation where that comeback route with that pass interference with Coleman, now it's time to dump it off to Cook to make them burn that timeout. You didn't do that. You want to challenge a play that Cook caught out of bounds, but you're not going to challenge a Kincaid catch?
I didn't think the Kincaid catch was a catch. I didn't think the Cook catch was either. I think so. The Kincaid catch, that would be a catch if he's in bounds. He's laying out of bounds. So he gets the feet down. If the ball's moving and being bobbled at all while you're out of bounds, that's out of bounds. I didn't have any problem with not challenging that. I thought they would have lost the challenge because he's out of bounds. If he's in bounds, that's a catch. Like the broadcast, they kept saying, does it hit the ground? Doesn't matter if it hit the ground.
Right.
Completing the act of making the catch is having control through it. And he didn't ever drop it, but out of bounds, that's not a catch. And in bounds, it is. So, I mean, that was my thought on that. 803-0550. Got a text I want to read you here from Dan. I wonder how many people identify with this. Dan writes in, last drive was a watershed moment for how I think about this team. Give me 32 seconds to get 60 yards in 2021 or 2022, and I'll take my chances. Yesterday, before the drive even started, I was just hoping to survive a first down and get to overtime. I don't believe in them anymore. That's what you've done to your offense. I mean, there's also the worst day for the offense. You know, if they're at their own three against Jacksonville with no timeouts, maybe you like their chances, but Houston has a lot more talent defensively. Mo in New Jersey. Hey, Mo.
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you doing?
Good. Thanks, Mo.
Yeah, appreciate you guys taking my call yesterday. You know, I had the Bills going, the Mets going. I'm thinking hopefully I get at least a split at worst. Both games get walked off on. Worst miserable day probably in a long time, but the reason I called is a couple of things. Number one, the end of game management, you guys nailed it. Some blame needs to be put on Josh. But McDermott's use of our timeouts when the Texans had their second to last drive almost sealed our fate. When he started using, I think he took one timeout, and they eventually got a third down conversion, I think it was. But then we punted. I'm thinking, okay, let's just get to overtime. Like your text message, the person you just read his text message was exactly what I was thinking. Let's just get to overtime and take our chances. We're fortunate to be in the situation we're in. Give our team credit for digging us out of the hole we put ourselves in and getting that game to where it was, where we could have went to overtime and gotten lucky. Maybe the coin flips our way, we win. But no, we take those three shots. Again, some blame on Josh. But like as the head coach, Sean McDermott is no longer calling the defense. He is officially, like, he's in charge of the team. He needs to know what's going on, and he needs to understand the situation. They got three timeouts. We can't take three knees. After that first incompletion, I'm like, and in my head, no matter what we do, they're going to get the ball back with time. And they did, and they kicked that 59-yard field goal, and the rest is history. The last thing I want to touch on is it's evident we need a true wide receiver.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
One.
Or a number two.
On the team.
And a number three. And a five.
So I give Shakir a little more credit than
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I know.
If if you look at the history of in-season trades for wide receivers, they almost never work out. So whether a trade for somebody, it's not even going to move the needle for me, because at the end of the day, I think we're stuck with what we have right now. And I blame the front office for putting us in this position. We're wasting Josh Allen's prime, and this squarely falls on their shoulders. No matter how it works out the rest of the year, I think we've been exposed a little bit. And even if we make a trade, I'm not even going to swing for Devontae Adams. Maybe it's like somebody from the Panthers, Deontay Johnson, or maybe from, we're lucky, Amari Cooper from the Browns. But it's not. I don't think that type of move is going to make this season much different.
Well, Mo, we'll see. Like, who could the guys be? Right, it could be Devontae Adams. Could be Amari Cooper. Could be who?
Cooper might be the name. Cooper really might be the name, because there's a lot lining up there. He is on a team that stinks. The Browns got smoked by the Commanders yesterday. The one thing that the Browns are supposed to have is an elite defense. And Jaden Daniels is doing this to everybody to start his career, but he lit them up yesterday. 34 points. So you've got a team that is in free fall. A veteran, older receiver. What's Cooper? 30 years old? He's never as old as you think he is. Won a one-year deal. And the difference, why the reason I'm not holding my breath on the Adams trade that Greg Thompson pointed out from Cover One last week, that if the Raiders retain salary on Adams to make it work for a team like the Bills, it'll be the first time they've done that.
Yeah,
Mark Davis does not do that. You do not need that with Cooper. Cooper is like $1 million. It's not even $1 million, I think, for the Bills if they were to trade for him. So if that guy gets to the market, that is an outside perimeter receiver, maybe not as good as he once was, but is way better, I think, than anything they have on the outside right now.
Well, stat of the day for you. I'll make this the stat of the day. Again, the Bills, anybody that was trying to convince me, I think they don't want to pay a number one. I think they want to do it like this. I never bought it for a single second. And it's because this is a team in transition. You know, sometimes it's nice to remind ourselves of that. This is a team that's eating a ton of cap space. When you include the cap space eaten for Diggs, which you should, do you know where the Bills' cap ranking is in wide receiver expenditures?
Oh, it's got to be high.
Where are the Bills rank? 1 through 32 in dollars spent to have this receiver core this year.
They're like ninth.
Fourth. This is the fourth most expensive wide receiver group. Four.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have $30 million on a guy to not be here. Yep. Should we really expect anything different? Put it this way.
Cooper's not different from that.
Though. Let's pretend for a moment that the Bills have Diggs on the team, because it'd be actually be a little bit less of a cap hit. And then Diggs and Shakir got hurt. That's what it would look like yesterday, was it not?
Yep.
If you put Shakir and Diggs on that team yesterday, what do? They just beat Houston. They're fine.
They win the game. They get the first down at the end, I think.
They probably get the first down. Not that we're getting Diggs back, but this team has the fourth most cap space allocated to wide receivers in the league. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. All right, Chris Brown, he had the call of the game. We'll get his perspective, see what he thinks about the final possession, about the path forward, too. That, to me, that's the big question moving forward this week and in the coming weeks. Are they going to do anything about it? Is there anything to do about it that isn't external help? Jeremy and Joe on a Buffalo Bills Football Monday. Football Monday brought to you by Northwest Bank. For what's next, get started at northwest.com.
Chris Brown's appearance on WGR is being brought to you by Northwest Bank. For what's next, get started at northwest.com. By Dunn Tire, official tire dealer of the Buffalo Bills. And by the Lockport Outdoor Store, high-impact gear for hardworking men and women.
Stroud looking deep over the middle, and it's picked off by Terrell Bernard at the 19-yard line. Terrell Bernard read C.J. Stroud like a book, and the Bills have the football.
Chris Brown on the Western Hotline. Terrell Bernard, welcome back, Terrell Bernard.
That was absolutely, I thought, the best play of the day.
It was
the
a
Bills.
heck of a play.
So good.
Welcome back to Terrell Bernard. Hopefully, Taron Johnson, Ed Oliver, and Khalil Shakir are able to return soon. Taylor Rapp as well. Chris Brown joins us on the Western Hotline to chat about the Bills' loss in Houston. Chris, good morning.
Good morning, guys.
Heck of a play by Bernard there. You know, like, that's the, it's never lost on me when you've got your A players in, you see a difference. And, you know, depth is nice, But the guys that are at the top of the food chain, they make a difference.
Yes, it's a matchup league in many ways. And when you have your frontline guys, it makes a big difference, to your point. And, you know, you think about the defensive effort yesterday. I mean, yes, they give up 300 passing yards to C.J. Stroud, but they were kind of in bend but don't break mode. And, you know, for the most part, kind of held them in the game and were fantastic in the second half. You know, they get a couple of three and outs. They get two takeaways. And this is, to your point, without playing with Ed Oliver, Von Miller, Taron Johnson, Matt Milano. I mean, run down the list, guys.
Yeah.
Even your safety is out in Taylor Rapp. So playing without five starters, essentially, and they held you in the game enough to win it. I mean, I think that's fair to say.
Yeah. I would agree. I mean, it almost felt like, as that, you know, whether it's momentum. I mean, Houston made so many mistakes. It's probably part of what makes this so difficult to swallow as a Bills fan, is that it felt like the Texans were giving the game away time and time again.
Right, especially at the end, right? They inexplicably throw a pass and the receiver goes out of bounds to stop the clock for Buffalo, who have no timeouts remaining. That one stupefied me. I mean, I even said it on the air. They just butchered the end of this game. And then the Bills are unsuccessful themselves in getting out of the shadow of their own goalposts at least enough to kill the clock and force overtime.
What was your biggest issue with, like, the end of the game? Was it just simply all of them being passes? Was it the types of passes? Of course, second down especially was one that was right down the field. I guess that late situation and sequence for the Bills where they get the ball with 32 seconds left, Chris, just, I guess, how did it go so wrong there for them?
Yeah, I mean, it was it's a bad series, man, really bad. And I know Bills fans are irate about it. I saw the social media bonfire that was going on last night as we were heading back to the plane. There are a million ways you could have done it. But I think the bottom line is the execution was poor all the way around. And I think that's a time in the game where you have to recognize, what is my team struggling with on offense and what is my team doing that's at least functional? And believe me, in the second half, there wasn't a lot to hang your hat on offensively. You could make the argument that you run it three times, you kill the timeouts, for Houston, and at least get to overtime. But the passing decisions, I think the only thing I would criticize there, where are the shorter passes?
Yeah.
Like, Josh is in his own end zone, and any leak in protection whatsoever, which was suspect for most of the day, and the thing's blown up. So do the Bills without Shakir not have anyone who can run a short route? Like, to me, guys, With the problems in the passing game right now, which is the bigger story here. To me, it's not even the end of the game. The biggest story in this game is the passing game. Because for two straight weeks, you've scored 3 points in the first half. Your third down conversion rate has been a problem since the season began, and it's only being brought to light now because they've lost their last two games. But 0 for 5 in the second half, 3 for 9 in the first half. I can't explain why it's gone so far south so fast, but it is troubling to me. But to me, James Cook has to be a featured part of your passing game. He is your most dynamic athlete on offense. He catches the ball when you throw it to him, which I know he's had some drops in his career, but he makes high degree of difficulty catches. The one on the sideline late in the game, he just doesn't get his elbow down to be in bounds. That was a ridiculous catch, high degree of difficulty catch. And he gets separation. Outside of Shakir, no one else consistently gets separation in the passing game. He has to be a featured part of your passing game going forward.
You know, with, as you said, the passing is a bigger issue than the end of the game. And I agree with that. It's actually part, I think it's why the end of the game looks so bad, is because we're at a stage now with this passing offense where, I mean, Allen had 9 completions and he's 4 for 18 targeting wide receivers. And in that spot, you know, you just need 10 yards. Sometimes, Chris, you need 10 yards to kill a game to win it. Sometimes you need 10 yards to get a game to overtime. And right now, this offense, I mean, I'm sure a lot of Bills fans don't have too much faith in the passing offense. I wonder how much faith Josh Allen has in the passing offense, because he's not had a connection really with anybody outside of Shakir this year.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, Kincaid had his highest receiving total in last week's game, you know, against the Ravens when he went 5 for 47, but that's not blowing the production meter up by any stretch. I think he's got to get on track somehow. And look, this may sound crazy, but you're looking for continuity of some kind in your passing game. So you have to go with the guys that have spent time with Josh on a game field in the regular season. That's Shakir, that's Cook, that's Kincaid, and maybe it's even Dawson Knox, as crazy as that is to say, because he's been invisible as well. I don't think he's been utilized in the passing game at all, but at least he's been a reliable target over the years, and maybe you have to find a way to work two tight ends a little bit more going forward too, until you can find someone else to emerge in the wide receiving core. And maybe it's Keon Coleman. I mean, maybe you put him in the slot and use him over the middle of the field, which is a part of the passing game that's sorely lacking right now.
Yeah, you know, the million-dollar question is, do you think they are more likely today than they were this time yesterday to seek outside help? I was listening to you guys talk on the roundtable about the idea of Devontae Adams, who's out there, or whether it's Amari Cooper or whatever. The million-dollar question is, will they seek help? Will they feel like they need to do that? They still have, you know, like 24 days to make a decision. I think the deadline's Halloween, so there's time still to evaluate, but that's going to be the thing that hangs the whole time.
Right. I think they let it play out. I think they're going to really comb through this film and see if there is a place where they can find their way to saying, look, we've made progress here in this area. This is a deficient area. Here's progress here. Let's try to grow this. Let's try to make this better. Because pass protection, guys, after three games, this team was number one in the league in pass protection. It has done a 180 the last couple of weeks. The two guards have really struggled the last couple of games and have not provided many solid protection downs. That's where the compromise has happened in their protection a good deal. The guys on the outside, little touch and go. I will remind Bills fans of this, though, who are probably feeling pretty down this morning. The Bills have a single set of back-to-back losses in each of the last five seasons. That's it. So let's just hope that this is that set of back-to-back losses and they get things right again going forward here with a big division game coming up on Monday night.
Yeah, I think about the division, Chris. I kind of almost feel like it presses the envelope forward even more to figure things out, where expectations were a little bit lower before this season than in past years. But man, the way the Jets have looked, the Dolphins won yesterday, but it was against New England, and they just obviously without Tua can't do much. The way the division looks, you know, does it amp the pressure up a little bit to figure it out? Because there is a real opportunity here to just kind of, if you can be, you know, relevant on offense, competent on offense, it feels like a division you should still cruise to.
Yeah, I think it's, again, I think it's just going to be a matter, Joe, of whether or not they feel there is enough traction to take this offense forward as it currently exists in terms of maybe scheming it a little bit better, utilizing some of your personnel a little bit better, like James Cook in the passing game. I'm going to be beating that drum all day. I think if they can find their way to that, I think they're going to try to let that organically develop here, primarily because the division is a mess. I actually think there's less urgency. A lot of these teams are struggling so badly and are arguably even more shorthanded than the Bills are, with the possible exception of the Jets, although they played without C.J. Mosley and haven't played without Morgan Moses the last two games. So, I mean, I think you can argue it both ways. I think they're going to be methodical in reviewing all of this and figure out, look, do we want to go another couple of weeks to see if it gets better, or do we strike now? There is time. The deadline's pushed back a week, so we'll have to see where it goes.
Thanks, Chris. We'll be listening today.
All right, take care, guys.
Chris Brown on the Wester Hotline as we chat every Monday and Friday. His appearance brought to you by Northwest Bank. For what's next, get started at northwest.com. By Dunn Tire, official tire dealer of the Buffalo Bills. And by Lockport Outdoor Store, high-impact gear for hardworking men and women. You know, there is Ian Rappaport just now talking about Aaron Rodgers, who has a low ankle sprain.
Yep.
And he also kind of asks openly, will he have a new target by Monday night? All this we are saying about how the division looks, if you're the Jets and you look at the Bills, are you not saying, hey, I think we can get him this year?
Devontae, right now, yes.
We watched that 100%. Game yesterday, like, I think we can get that team this year. They have Josh Allen. He's got no help. Let's go get him.
Well, they also might feel like they have to get the Bills this year.
Right. That's part of it, too.
Yeah.
Not only do we have to, but we can do it. Maybe Devontae Adams gets traded this week. Bills and Jets, Monday Night Football. Listen, I think that game, you want to talk about spotlight of spotlights, that's the one. They win, everything's going to be just fine. They lose, it'll be a panic. That's panic.
Rodgers has a low ankle sprain, by the way.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
803-0550, 1-888-550-2550.
Tune into WGR each Bills game day during the rest of the regular season for your chance to win or answer our tailgate trivia question presented by Game Day Hospitality. Your chance to win two VIP tickets to Game Day Hospitality Red Zone Tailgate Party. Tickets include food, drink, entertainment, and access to the VIP tent. Visit our contest page at WGR550.com for details.
Hey, be caller 5 to win a pair of tickets to the Shoresy Fall Classic. Caller 5 to 2214-WGR. Pair of tickets to the Shoresy Fall Classic at KeyBank Center November 13th, where the cast of the TV show Shoresy compete against Buffalo Sabres alumni tickets. Buffalo Sabres alumni. Tickets courtesy of AEG Presents tickets are on sale at Ticketmaster.com. Caller 5, 2214-WGR. Time to go around the league in a dash. That's brought to you by Dash's Markets, serving Western New York for over 100 years. Shop the family of finer foods. One very quick note. If you're on hold, we'll get to you on the other side, promise. Brian and Larry have been waiting a long time. One quick note on the Seahawks and the Giants that you don't often see this.
Yep.
The Seahawks and the Giants, that game ends 29-20. So the Seahawks are going for a game-tying kick, and the Giants block it and return it all the way.
Yep.
And after the blocked field goal touchdown, the Giants basically declined to attempt any sort of extra point attempt at all.
Yeah, they kneeled it.
They kneeled a two-point conversion because they were up 9. And the only thing that could go wrong is if they got it blocked or returned for a point the other way.
2 points the other way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which so instead of giving that 1/1,000,000th of a percent chance,
right,
they took a knee and took a 9-point lead with 55 seconds left.
Yep. If the Seahawks block the extra point and return it, then now they're down 7 with a chance to tie it.
Which, of course, would be crazy.
But it could.
It could happen.
You go from 0% chance it happens
to 0.5.
Right. And you would have some chance. Yep. Also, around the league, Kyler Murray continues to celebrate before he scores touchdowns. Earlier in the year, he turned around and put his arm up before the ball had reached his receiver. Yep. Yesterday on his 50-yard touchdown run, if you saw the highlight, he is celebrating at the 45. He is 45 yards from the end zone, and his hand is in the air. I'm scoring here. Pretty amazing.
Monday Night Football on the way. Right back to your phone calls, 803-0550. It is Buffalo Bills Football Monday on WGR.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.